The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. I'm so happy today about what the Diamondbacks have been doing. Isn't it fun? Look, there's going to be years where I'm going to sit here and say, man, they were sellers. It sucked. But it's fun when you're a team that buys. It means that you are going for it. We don't have enough of that here in the Valley. We really don't. You know what my stance has been on the NBA team? Just meandering around since 2010 without finding their way to a single playoff game. And the hockey team has been, you know, just off the rails. And I think the ownership situation with the Coyotes is probably going to change again here in the next few weeks. Yeah, I said that. There's plenty on that front that I can't talk about today. But I will get to it when the time is right. The baseball team and what they did over the last few days is not going to be front page headline news. For those of you that like to just surf around on the net and read some stuff so that you feel like you're informed just enough to be dangerous, the Diamondbacks aren't really listed anywhere today in terms of, man, just killing it, just over the top, getting it done. I don't know, since Dodgers got Manny Machado, they're 6-6. It's August 1st. I know that doesn't mean much to those of you that wear Dodger blue and that's all you care about. I don't wear Diamondback colors. I don't wear Dodger colors. I just kind of look at things and say, all right, they're better. But yesterday, Tuesday, it was fun. It was fun to see them say, we're going to go get Brad Ziegler and we're going to bring him back here. And Diekman comes in too, and the Diamondbacks bullpen suddenly is much deeper. And I've said this through the years, the last couple of years, that when you have Mike Hazen around here, if your outfield isn't showing what you want to see and you can go get Steven Souza Jr., who too, as of yet, has not overly produced, right? But I think that we see that there's things coming from Steven Souza Jr. now that are better than earlier this year. If you believe that A.J. Pollock is going to walk away from this team at the end of the season, and this is a conversation to go really deep in once we get into November or even the end of October, and I do believe he's going to walk, then there's going to be numbers out there. The Diamondbacks outfield's pretty darn good. You've got to convince John Jay to stick around, David Peralta and Steven Souza Jr. I'd go to war with that next year. There's forward thinking going on here rather than let's just take a Band-Aid. And let's put the Band-Aid over here. And gosh, we just certainly hope that things will come together. Fernando Rodney was a one-year bullpen Band-Aid, right? But when they were able to go get Boxberger, and there's some of you that don't like Boxberger. There's some of you that just want Archie to be the closer. But I'd say the bullpen for last year got them enough to where they were in the postseason. If Mike Hazen looks around, and Mike Hazen's taking a little bit of heat. I'll get into that in a bit. Some national heat about the ethics of how he went about at the deadline. And I have no problem with what he did. And I'll explain that coming up a little bit later in the show. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. You need life insurance for your family, for yourself. Have you looked at your financial needs and said, hey, I got this figured out? Or maybe you haven't. And chances are you probably need a tune-up if you've got something going, or maybe you don't have anything going. Just start simple with Sagicor Now. Go to sagicornow.com, log on, get your free quote, get it right there, right now, and check out where you're at. That's at Sagicor. Appreciate their support. Last night was a... Did you watch the game, E? Did you see them?
Saw parts of it. Didn't see all of it, but yeah, I watched parts of it.
So... Zach Godley, you know I've not been a fan recently. I've just felt like, man, when he's out on the field, it can either be all or nothing with him. And I know Robbie Ray hasn't been very good lately either.
But he's been ungodly the last few starts.
That's about as corny as I would.
You're say. Welcome.
It was good.
I'm here every day.
Every day. You appear nightly, as we like to say. You appear daily.
Right there in that little box.
Almost daily.
See this little box?
So yesterday, let's just get this out. Yesterday, some of you weren't happy that we didn't do a live show. So I said this on Monday when I came off of our July break. On Tuesdays, we are not going to do a live show, unless I see something that is beyond big just to do an hour. We have a couple of TV projects I'm working on now, not just one. And you guys like the TV show. TV show outside of Fox Sports Arizona is very good. It airs again tonight. That's 16 airings during the week. We have lots of things that we're doing. So it's not that we don't like you. It's we like doing this. And I have to find ways when I have advertisers and partners and people that say, what else do you have? Because we want more of what you're doing. Well, we have got to create more. Okay. And we are self-funded. So that's what I have to do. And if I have more partners that come in board, then I can go do shows every single day of the week. That's how it works. So I got to get that out of the way. The other thing, I'm kind of distracted today. I got invited. It's the 35th high school anniversary in a week from Friday. And I've sat here with the staff and have said to them 2 weeks from Friday. I'll get it right. Otherwise, I'll just show up and there'll be nobody there.
35 years.
I know. Wow. I know. Does it show?
I was how old when you graduated?
Does it show?
No. Does it show? Running your own company? No.
That's it. That's it. Right. So do I go?
Of course.
It's the night of Centennial against Castile.
Oh, it's just a game.
It's the night of Hamilton against Chaparral. It's the night of Pinnacle at Perry.
Will you have another 35-year anniversary or reunion is what most people call it. But I like high school anniversary.
Do you go to yours?
No. I went to the 10 and the 15. And then I think the people in charge of it decided they didn't want to do it anymore. So I went to the 10, the 20, actually.
I emceed the 5. And when I was working for the Chargers, and they thought it was really cool. And
neat.
Yeah. And I'm not one of those that says, this is awesome and amazing. It's like, yeah, I show up. So I made fun of one of the guys at the 5-year anniversary. He happened to like girls. And 5 years later, he was working in the field of gynecology. And it was a pretty easy, pretty simple, lay it up, get it out of the park. I'm like looking around the room saying, hey, so this person and this person and this and this guy was not happy. Was not having any part of it. And it's like, come on, it's our 5-year anniversary. Let's enjoy ourselves.
The biggest change between 10 and 20 for me was how the guys looked. 10 years out of high school, most of the guys looked okay. 20 years, you could tell who partied pretty hard in high school.
Wow. So am I, because I'm follically challenged now by choice, by the way.
No, this is my high school. I don't have no idea.
But in my case, am I supposed to go being self-conscious? I look a little different from when I was 18, 17.
It is 35 years later. I'd hope you look a little different.
I think I look pretty good.
I bet the gynecologist looks pretty good. What do you think?
I bet he does. That's a good line.
Is this me turning my mic off?
No, it's fine. But do I go to this? And so I've been scuffling with that a little bit. And, you know, the thing about high school reunions nowadays is we're all on Facebook anyhow. If I really want to find you in this day of social media, I can find you. There are people that I do want to find, and I'll go online and I'll see that they're employed here or they've moved there. And you do a Google search, you see what company they're with, and you call that company, and you get to the director, and then they send you to the person, and voila, it's not hard. It's no different than us finding guests. We've been doing guests for 30-plus years. So I'm kind of torn on that. You know, the sports end of things today, there's some stories I'm going to get to as the show progresses, like what's going on at Ohio State today with Urban Meyer and an assistant coach and knowing of alleged domestic violence. And when I say alleged, that there were tweets between the wife and Urban Meyer's wife and so on and so forth. And Brett McMurphy, who's very good, has drilled down on this. This is not just a minor little detail today in the sports landscape. I think what's going on with Rising FC there in Atlanta, they are at the MLS All-Star Game. The commissioner of MLS, Don Garber, met with Rising last week, first time. Earlier this week, in an interview that came out with USA Today, Don Garber listed Phoenix as one of the candidates for expansion. Where are they at on that? So there's some things going on that aren't just backup left tackle related that I want to get into as the show progresses. Jude LaCava is going to be with us later in the show, and we'll be back with more after this time out. We'll have Talk to the Lopes today at 11 o'clock as well. That's what we do on Wednesday. Starting next Wednesday, Jordan and Haley are going to be back with their Friday night 360 AZ preview show with a high school football season is right around the corner. We are Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. Pro College High School makes no difference to me. Sports360AZ.com. Make sure you check it out. Thanks. And we'll be back after this timeout. So the big overriding story today in college football is what's going on at Ohio State. And we're not talking about Ohio State against Michigan. We're not talking about Ohio State and quarterback Jack Miller at Chaparral High School. We're not talking about Ohio State and anything else outside of an assistant coach. Those of you that are Ohio State Buckeye fans are going to say, oh, it's media witch hunt, so on and so forth. And I would just simply say to you that when Brett McMurphy decides that he is going to put his pen to paper, and he is the first one that had this report a week ago, and he's come back now with more details, it's not good. So I'm going to read some of this. Urban Meyer fired Zach Smith 10 days ago after a string of alleged instances of domestic abuse against the assistant coach dating back to 2008. 2008, these came to light. And despite those incidents, Smith remained employed by Urban Meyer at both Florida and Ohio State for the better part of the last decade. The day after Smith was fired, once all the information had become public, Meyer was due to get extensive questioning from reporters at Big Ten Media Days regarding what he knew, when he knew it, and why he kept Smith on his staff. Brett McMurphy has gone back and gone further into this, and I think that he posted this 3 hours ago, and I'll just read directly from Brett McMurphy, who, by the way, today is in Columbus, Ohio, meaning he's probably hiding out inside a, I don't know, a Days Inn or something. Because if you're in Columbus, Ohio, and you're reporting this today, it's not gonna go well. Reading from Brett McMurphy this morning, text messages I have obtained, an exclusive interview with the victim, and other information I have learned shows Ohio State coach Urban Meyer knew in 2015 of domestic abuse allegations against a member of his coaching staff. Courtney Smith, ex-wife of fired Ohio State assistant coach Zach Smith, provided text messages between her and the wives of Ohio State coaches, including Urban Meyer and his wife, Shelley, showing Meyer's knowledge of the situation. Meyer said last week during Big Ten Media Days that he had no knowledge of two alleged domestic violence incidents in 2015 with former assistant wide receivers coach Zach Smith that were investigated by the Powell, Ohio Police Department.
That's a bad look.
Meyer said, there's more. Meyer said, had he known, he would have fired Smith in 2015, 3 years before he did last week, after I, Brett McMurphy, reported this alleged domestic violence. This is the ex-wife. Quote, all the coaches' wives knew. They all did, every single one. Ohio State may be in violation, according to Brett McMurphy, of Title IX, which states discrimination on the basis of sex can include sexual harassment, rape, and sexual assault. A college or university that receives federal funding may be held legally responsible when it knows about and ignores sexual harassment or assault in its programs or activities. Important line here from Brett McMurphy. When asked specifically if he knew of the domestic violence incidents with Zach Smith, or if he had been told of them, Meyer said, quote, I was never told about anything. Never anything came to light. Never had a conversation about it. So I know nothing about it. I asked people back at the office to call and see what happened, and they came back and said they knew nothing. However, text messages I, Brett McMurphy, have obtained sent from Courtney Smith, Meyer's wife Shelley, and other Ohio State coaches' wives show Urban Meyer had a number of Ohio State assistant coaches. They were aware of Smith's domestic violence issues for several years. Courtney said Shelley Meyer, Urban's wife of nearly three decades, knew about the abuse that began in 2009, continued in 2015, culminated with Zach Smith being served a domestic violence civil protection order last week. Courtney said she and Shelley often discussed Zach's domestic violence. Shelley said she was going to have to tell Urban. I said, that's fine. You should tell Urban. I know Shelley did everything she could. So, and I could read on this, but some of you right now are saying, I just want my football. I do not want to hear about anything with my program. I would say to you that when it comes to laying a hand on a woman, back off your football. That's completely, totally unacceptable. And if Urban Meyer, as Brett McMurphy has reported, and those of you that are the U of A, you're going to say, yeah, well, ESPN reported Sean Miller did this and they changed their story and so on and so forth. I know. You're going to come up with fake news. Of course you are. That's your only defense on this. So I look at what's going on in Ohio State today, and if, in fact, he knew, and this is not something to where it's going to just go away, and Greg Schiano is sitting there, ironically enough. I mean, Greg Schiano might be the coach at Ohio State this year. Today is going to be a big news cycle day. They don't send Brett McMurphy out just to go cover something tiny. And, hey, you might want to have something going on over at Ohio State. You might want to go check. That's not what happens when they send their hired guns, okay? When something major in Major League Baseball happens, Pedro Gomez is going to be on the field. The same with Buster Olney. This isn't the, well, this story is going to produce something in 5 years. When they do that with Brett McMurphy, am I right on this, Eric? Am I right on this with Brett McMurphy?
Dead on. Oh, yeah.
He's not, this is not this.
There's a fire. Go cover the fire.
This is not something that is minor. And when Urban denied this at Media Days last week, here we go a week later. And Brett's embedded in Columbus talking to the ex-wife who has the text messages that she's given to Brett McMurphy. So,
and you know Gene Smith is in charge of all
this.
Oh
my gosh.
Former ASU AD.
Sure,
so
sure.
I wonder what he's thinking.
Sure. And when it comes to domestic violence, this is not something if a coach knew that this was going on his watch for as many years, that you just say, we're going to penalize him and he's not going to coach against Northeastern Texas.
No, that should be zero tolerance. You're out.
No, that's where I'm kind of at on this one is I'm sitting out here in Arizona looking at something in Columbus, Ohio, knowing where we are in our country today, and people are going to say, well, it's the head football coach. It's like Alabama gives Nick Saban a raise, and he makes like 20 times more than the governor of Alabama now because he gets a raise. And it's true. It's true. So there's certain programs where I just want my football. Ohio State, they got to take down these damn media guys bringing up this. Guys. And so, of course, I sit here and look at, have any of the recruits under Urban Meyer looked at this today and picked up the phone and called? And that does include Jack Miller over at Chaparral, I would say. He's top quarterback in the nation in 2 years. He's already committed to Ohio State. That's how quickly stuff changes in the college landscape. So that story is not going to just die down and go away from how it is being presented today and how it is going to be presented, I believe, tonight. They're not going to have Brett McMurphy not on the air and not putting stuff up on this. So that story is really something else. On the pro football front, I think the most interesting story, at least locally, the officials are going to come in and try and explain the helmet-to-helmet rule, which the Eagle players said earlier this week, they walked out of the meeting and they were like, I don't know what these guys are talking about. They're going to make the officials available to us to go see tomorrow or Friday. And so that's going to be a story to keep an eye on here in the Valley. Nationally, I think the biggest story is Le'Veon Bell. If we're talking about NFL stuff, so Le'Veon Bell's in this place in Pittsburgh where we're talking about the best of the best. And off the field with fantasy football, because some of you have asked, Fabiano's with us tomorrow. We'll start just a little deep dive with Michael tomorrow. But is Le'Veon Bell even worth taking if you're on the fantasy side? If you're on this a Steeler fan, his contract next year, it would be on the franchise side, $25 million. There's no way they're paying a running back $25 million. So is Le'Veon Bell's holdout, he's going to show up. There's certain guys, Aaron Donald's another one. Aaron Donald's just going to show up when Aaron Donald wants to show up because he's had enough of this fake football in August. He's not going to get hurt. He's going to roll in like 3 days before the Rams start, and he'll kill it. That's what he did last year. Le'Veon Bell's doing the same sort of thing, except last year Le'Veon Bell got off to a slow start. So some of these star players, but Le'Veon Bell's is really interesting because could the Steelers simply say, you know, if you're just going to roll in here at the last moment, and you're going to leave anyways at the end of this upcoming season, and we're not going to be able to keep you, maybe we should just part ways, I don't know, now. So I think that's a story that I look at nationally in the league and say, that would be very interesting. All right, Jude is next. So Jude and I are going to do, we got a shotgun approach to today. We're going to be all over the place because there's so much going on here locally. On the Diamondbacks front, where are the Cardinals at? Rising's down at the MLS All-Star Game in Atlanta, and the commissioner is talking about them. Jude's been involved with Rising as I have. And talking about that, that's all straight ahead. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ, which airs tonight at 6 p.m., 6:30, 10 and 10:30. Thanks for being with us. All right, late edition coming up at 10:50. Bobby Dooley from Atlanta today. Rising FC, the commissioner of the MLS, Don Garber, listed Rising earlier this week as one of the potential expansion cities. It's the first time that he has done that publicly anywhere. And the ownership group is down in Atlanta having meetings with the USL and MLS. So I'll have Bobby on with us in a few minutes for an update on that front. As promised, though, the great Jude LaCava is with us, Fox 10 sports director, because this is one of those days where guys like us that have been around longer than, I don't know, time, can look around the valley and say, it's great today, Jude, to have a sports franchise say, we are going for it. We are all in. We've put every chip in the table. And the baseball team has done that. I was very pleased with what the Diamondbacks did the last few weeks. How about you?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Mike Hazen. I mean, between last year and the acquisition of J.D. Martinez and then adding where they definitely have needs, two more arms to that bullpen, it's an aggressive move, and I'm curious because I think that there's an interesting, long view and short view. The long view is we know a number of free agents are coming up next year, including Patrick Corbin, A.J. Pollock. You still have to think about Goldie's extension. So I think there is a sense of urgency to say there's a door open, and we have a chance to compete with the Dodgers. It's one of those rare seasons. So let's pull out all the stops, and they have done that. And they've added a couple of arms where they need it most. I think this bullpen has been worked hard, worked mm-hmm. aggressively, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of reps for the likes of Archie Bradley, even Yoshi Hirano, Brad Boxberger, a little bit wobbly of late. But this refreshes and hits the reset button for the bullpen. Now the question will be, can the starters sustain and keep up quality starts? Godley, I thought he had his best start last night. Granted, yep. It's a decimated Rangers team, but you gotta like what Hazen is doing in the here and now.
You know, what's interesting to me is when it comes out that Mike Hazen, on an interview last night, admitted that once they knew that Jake Lamb's injury was severe, they didn't want it to get out, and so they go get the Escobar deal. And then the Lamb injury is released. But Hazen admitted last night that, yeah, they didn't want Lamb's story to get out. He got ripped pretty good by Henry Schulman in San Francisco today for that as a practice that's, a little questionable. I don't see any problem with that. That is sports. If you know one of your players is hurt, you're not going to put it out there by any stretch of the imagination. I just like the fact that he's aggressive in doing things, even to where nationally people are saying, oh, man, those guys in Arizona, I don't know if I can trust them or not.
Well, they're very secretive about how they handle injuries. They're very secretive about, you lose leverage. If Minnesota knows you are in desperate need for a starting third baseman the rest of the way, they're going to ask for more. They're going to leverage you to the hilt. So it's a smart move, and there's no specific rule. So I would disagree with the commentary on that. And from Schulman's standpoint, I look at it this way, that Mike's sharp. They never show their hand. I understand that in this analytics world. They approach, injuries a lot of ways in a different kind of way. They're much more conservative in trying to look at the health of players. And, I like the way they approach things. Mike's very sharp and very impressive. And I can't say enough good things about how he handles himself.
You mentioned, we're talking with Jude LaCava, you mentioned earlier about the Dodgers and a chance where the Dodgers are down somewhat. I would take it a step further and just say the whole National League. I never thought the Nationals would be circling the drain, and I still think they're a team that if they could figure it all out, and maybe last night scoring 25 against the Mets was the start of it, but there's just not a team out there that I look at top to bottom and say, wow, they're really far head and shoulders above of everybody else. If the Diamondbacks were in the American League, they'd struggle to make the postseason, right? I mean, let's just
That's so true. That is so true.
And so
the
in
power,
the National League,
the power's in him.
Yeah.
In the American League, it look, there are six, seven teams deep there that are exceptional in the American League. That's why there you see this go-forward attitude. I'm just curious about Ken Kendrick. I you know, he's been extremely low profile of late. There's a lot of interesting issues with this team in the long-term future, the maintenance and renovation of Chase Field. We haven't heard a lot from either Derek Hall and or Ken Kendrick. So I'm kind of just curious where they're at these days.
I agree with you. I mean, there's some stuff. I hear Salt River Pima is going to put that land across from the Cubs, that big hole in the ground at the 101-202, up for RFP in October. And that's going to be the first step, because I still believe, I bet Derek a ham sandwich on the air, that that's where they're going to be playing their games down the road. But that's the first step if something were to happen. I guess the question for me to you is, where is their weakness now? Where do they not make it? Where is it? Is it what we saw in May where the bottom just fell out inexplicably? If they go through a stretch like that, where do they not make it from your view?
Starting rotation. And I say that regarding the amount of breaking ball sliders in particular from Robbie Ray. Ray did not have, he's not returned to that first half form of last year. Corbin has been good, but again, he's throwing a ton of sliders, and I worry about wear and tear factors. I for some reason, they've just, you look, I understand it. You're going to throw your best pitches. I get that. But from an analytics standpoint, which they're so prone to listen to, there's a wear and tear factor. We saw that with the bullpen. So the question for me is going to be starting pitching. You know, obviously they've made some adjustments here. I would have liked to have seen one additional arm in the bullpen and one additional starter in the rotation. I just think they're right on the edge there. Now, Granke's been sensational. He looks like that ace. But I'm kind of curious. I think the offense is good enough to win games. It's going to be the rotation, Brad, that gets them there or not.
Because, Jude, here's the thing. As you said off the top, with the free agency stuff looming, you have to throw Granke's contract in there, too, as it relates to Goldschmidt. That's why I was told Machado was never going to happen, that the ownership, not just Ken, but the other owners, were saying there's no way that we're going to bring Manny Machado here, because if we do, we're automatically saying Paul Goldschmidt's not coming back. And so,
well, there was a lot of misreporting on that. I have to tell you something. I have some very good contacts within the Orioles organization. There was never a legitimate offer made. And I'm not referring to Buck, my connection to Buck Showalter.
Sure.
There was not a legitimate offer made. I think it was a bit of a, let's throw it out there, and then let's do a little reversal here and focus on Eduardo Escobar, which was a brilliant move. So, again, I think that's the way Mike does business, and he's shrewd. I'm impressed with him. I mean, if you look at the deals between last year and this year, they're spot on. And but I'll go back to what I said, the rotation. Can the rotation hold up to the rigors of what will be, I think, an unbelievable final 2 weeks? If you look at September 14th, the rest of the season, that could very well dictate the fate of the D-backs, because they've got a ton of games with, you know, the Dodgers. They've got the Rockies.
Yeah.
They've got some really competitive games in there with contenders.
You've been out at Cardinals, and Steve Keim, you have no doubt that he will come back at some point. There's been some rumbling of maybe Keim goes, Terry McDonough's put in, this is just too much for him to overcome. I don't know where Steve's going to be on August 21st, around the third preseason game. I don't know that. What do you think on that situation?
I think
right
he
now?
Comes back. I think Steve made a horrible mistake. He's been criticized nationally, locally. You just can't do that. And the hypocrisy of, you know, we want to make sure, as Bruce Arians used to say, don't be that guy, and all of a sudden your GM is that guy.
Right.
it's a horrible image. And let's not forget, Mike Bidwell was embarrassed. He's on the disciplinary committee. He's a guy that wants to make sure and at least prove to the commissioner he's doing the right things with his organization. And now you have your GM with an extreme DUI. So I do think he'll survive. I think he's going to get this year, at the very least. I don't think a decision will be made regarding Steve's future until after this season. So I do see him coming back. As far as observations from camp, and I've been out there the last three practices, like any new staff, Brad, there's a renewed energy, there's an enthusiasm, there's an exceptional review on Ray Brown, the offensive line coach who used to play many years ago for the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. He's made a nice impression. Mike McCoy seems a little bit more flexible with how he's going about the offense. And, you know, here's kind of the thing that I come away with. When you watch Sam Bradford, just from an artistic standpoint of accuracy, spiral, poise, knowing where to go with the ball, it's almost tragic that he's had this knee injury. He really is an exceptional talent, but the question will remain, can he stay on the field? And that's always been the question with Sam. But from if you love watching quarterbacks throw the football, this guy is as good as I've ever seen. And I know that sounds crazy. But what about the injuries? Yeah, you're right. But he's accurate. He's poised. He's a student of the game. It's just a question of can he stay on the field. Rosen's going to be a project. You can't force feed the guy. But there's some holes there. I don't know how effective this wide receiving core is really going to be. There's a lot of new faces. You got some young guys. You got a few veteran guys. I think that's kind of an interesting curiosity for me. Are they physical enough? Can Diche really come up and be that guy? How aggressive and physical can they be at the linebacker position, which really you rely a lot on in a 4-3? Retooled secondary, the same story we've talked about really since Gerard Powers left the corner opposite Patrick. So there's some concerns. I think you got to be realistic and give Steve Wilks a lot of time. I like his approach. I'm impressed with Steve. But this is more of a rebuild than it's a retool.
No, I agree. Look, I'm fine with going through this because the last couple of years, yeah, you were hoping, but I think we all saw age. I think we all saw that that Bruce's health had diminished, and I think his fire wasn't what it once was, especially last season. And so you're going to go through a retool or rebuild per se. You just can't be like the Suns where you just don't care. And that's another conversation for another day. Before I get you out of here, so you've been out at Rising. You've done a lot on it. Fox had the World Cup over the summer. They're down in Atlanta today. I've been on this for the last few years. I do believe we're going to have MLS here, and I think it's going to be awarded to them this coming winter. Where are you at on that?
Well, first off, I want to thank you because you were kind enough to open up the door for our Fox World Cup soccer coverage with Bobby, with the assistant coaching staff, with really access to a team that is on the move with great ownership support. And a nice fan base that's only going to get better. Look, they're the biggest market in the mix with a great demo here in Arizona. I think they're a can't miss. And I think that when you look at the demo of soccer moms and young people and millennials, this is a great story about to happen. Bobby Dooley's as sharp as they come in terms of being a COO. With his background and experience, I'm really impressed. And I think that, look, there's some old school people that are always going to say, well, we're an American football country. And it was a blow not to have a Team USA in the World Cup. But it's going to change. It's coming. And, Brad, I think that they're a can't miss. They've done everything right. They've upgraded ownership. They've got a ton of money. They have a plan on the table for a stadium. They're sharp. They've got good leadership, and they're coming strong, and they're here to stay for a long time to come. And this could be one of the most dynamic markets in all the MLS. I think potentially it could be very similar to a Seattle or a Portland, which just has a tremendous fan support base up there in the Northwest. I see it coming. And I have to take my cap off to these guys. But and they were really instrumental, by the way, along with Shillis Hinman, the GCU coach, who's a brilliant yep. soccer thinker yep. And legend, and helping us with our coverage. So they're coming, and I think fans should be excited. I think this is going to be another plum in the sports mecca, as Jerry Colangelo used to say, of the Southwest. This is going to be special.
Yeah, no, well put. And there's more that I think on a media end that we need to do to push this thing across the finish line.
Yes,
too.
This
is what keeps. This is what we are supposed to do. And so, you know, good job in getting that stuff out there too. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Stay well.
You got it, Brad. Stay in touch.
You got it. See, there's Jude. Good to catch up with him. Bobby Dooley, who Jude mentioned, is going to join us next. He is down in Atlanta, where they are having the MLS All-Star Game. And there's meetings there involving the MLS. So we'll get an update on Rising FC. That is next. I'm Brad Sismat. So it's coming up on 2 years when I first met Bobby Dooley. Bobby Dooley was at Peoria Sports Complex with Berke Bakai when I first met him. We were down on the field getting ready for a broadcast. And I visited with Bobby for a few minutes. And he has risen and risen as the operation has risen, as the team's profile has risen, to now the chief operating officer and general manager of Rising FC. He is in Atlanta, where it is the MLS All-Star break meetings and game and all of that. I wanted Bobby to jump on board for a couple of minutes just to give us a feel from Atlanta, especially with Don Garber, commissioner of the MLS, commenting on Phoenix publicly this week for the first time. Last week, as we reported, Rising did meet face-to-face with the commissioner. How are you today? How's Atlanta?
Atlanta's great.
Yeah?
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Yeah, oh, no problem. So what are your guys' plans down there? You're down there with Berke Bakai and Brett Johnson from ownership. What are you guys working on this week down there?
Well, it's truly the soccer epicenter right now. We're here. We have our USL, United Soccer League, meetings taking place, not only at the Division II level, but also at Division III level, as we look to launch our organization into the pro ranks down in Tucson. So we also have, you know, of course, the Major League Soccer executives are here, and owners and front office members. So it's truly a great opportunity for us as an organization to really just gather knowledge and learn from these different organizations at all different levels, soccer operations, business operations, and really just continue to build the Rising name and try to take the best from every other organization and bring it back and some key learnings to really continue to try to elevate Phoenix Rising to the highest standard.
When you shake someone's hand and meet them for the first time and you say with Phoenix Rising, what is their response about the organization and the brand in the soccer world?
Well, they certainly know who we are. I think, you know, that started last year with the branding efforts, with the exposure we got and signing players such as Didier Drogba, Omar Bravo, Sean Wright Phillips. So we really made a splash last year. And then as, you know, we transition into this season and they see, you know, the way we're performing on the field, the way our guys are developing, you know, they look at the sponsors that have come on board, they see the media exposure, they see the highlights on SportsCenter of our organization. You know, I think we're starting to, we're not catching anyone by surprise anymore. We're starting to really have a nice presence and a nice foothold in Arizona and across the North American footprint. There's a lot of organizations, especially in the USL, that are looking at what we've done, from the facility that we put up in a short amount of time to, you know, the way that we're, you know, selling out in heat. So, you know, the way we're continuing to add partners. So it's really a fantastic. It's a great opportunity to just really network and bounce ideas off of. But Phoenix Rising is definitely people are certainly approaching us this year and asking a lot of questions.
Bobby Dooley with us, and general manager of Phoenix Rising FC. He's in Atlanta at the MLS All-Star Game and festivities and meetings and all of that. I don't want to diminish USL because they've been a terrific partner from my point of view as they have grown, and their numbers are showing they are really growing. You're in meetings with them. How are they about your growth, them knowing you've met with Don Garber and just that whole relationship with USL?
Well, the USL is great. The USL, I think, is very supportive of just the overall growth of the sport. and, you know, introducing a Division III league next year, which we at, you know, Phoenix Rising, FC Tucson are very excited about. They're about growing the sport, and it takes, you know, there's a lot of markets that have a strong appetite. And you look at where the USL was at in 2014 to where they're at, you know, this year and where they're going to continue to go. The sport's growing. You know, you got markets like Louisville that are building, you know, multi-million dollar facilities. RGV has a, you know, state-of-the-art stadium. So, you know, the sport's growing, you know, at all levels, at the youth level, at the professional level here in the U.S. And I think we're all very excited as we all build towards, you know, the World Cup here in 8 years. I think it's just going to be transcendent for you know, soccer in general.
All right, before I get you out of here, the meeting last week with the ownership group and Don Garber, the fallout from that has been nothing but positive. And then Garber does get quoted on Phoenix being among the cities for consideration. The momentum in the last 5 days, if you could put that into place.
Yeah, you know, there's certainly, you know, some excitement, but there's also, as we all know, there's a lot of work to be done, and that's why, you know, the timing of being able to meet with, you know, the senior execs at Major League Soccer last week, you know, leading up into this week, and having everyone here from the media outlets to all the teams represented and agents from, you know, across the globe, you know, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of buzz. You know, there's a lot of things that we have to continue to do and continue to work on. And you know, hopefully we keep building this thing all the way to the top.
I guess the right word to use is humble. That's what I've gotten from the organization in the last 5 days is, yeah, it's part of the process. We had this meeting, but we have to still roll up our sleeves, bloody our knuckles. A lot of work to do on many, many fronts. Is that the approach that the organization is taking, Bobby?
Yeah, we're you know, it's always flattering to read about, you know, the success or your organization being mentioned, and, you know, we're going to continue. That's all we know how to do, you know, in our, you know, nearly 2 years of existence as Phoenix Rising is, you know, work hard. We have a phenomenal ownership group that's committed to this project and has invested a lot of, you know, money and time into what we're doing, and it starts right there. And then all the way down onto the field, and we're working hard at every level. Everyone's got a job, and we're going to continue to try to learn. And, you know, the sport's evolving. You know, it's relatively young when you think about it in North America, you know, compared to the rest of the world. So every day is a learning process. Every day is an education process to build the brand, to get more people exposed to it, and invite them on out to come to see, you know, great soccer on the field and an organization that I think the entire state and region can be excited about and stand behind, because there's a lot of really good people that are working hard.
Let's go off that. Back to meetings. Appreciate it, Bobby. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bobby Dooley there down at the MLS meetings with the MLS All-Star. Just them being there on the ground is big. It is. They're in the game. They're in the room. This has been a process that I've been following for many, many years, and this is as good as it's going to get. If it doesn't happen with this group, I don't think it's going to happen. Quite honestly, this group's got it together. They've stayed in their lanes. They've got variety and versatility from top to bottom in their ownership group, but it's not going to happen this weekend. But you just keep tabs on it week by week, brick by brick. That's been the approach that I've taken on it. Talk to the Lopes is next. Stay with us.
Grand Canyon University Athletics, all things across GCU. Love doing Talk to the Lopes. This week we're going to focus on the sport of speed outdoors, and that is cross country. And, you know, cross country and track and field, to me, have been one of the better kept secrets around the athletic department over at GCU. So much on Talk to the Lopes is on the other sports. And so this week we said, let's get Sarah Slattery on, the head cross country coach at GCU, to talk about what's going on with the program. How are you, Coach?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
Good. Good. How are things with the program, the State of the Union? Give us an overview of how you feel the progress with the program is coming into your fourth season.
I'm really excited about this season. I've been with GCU for 3 years, and last year was our first, you know, with all of our sports, first year we could actually go to regionals and nationals. And So recruiting wise, it's been a lot better now that we're at that Division I level, and we can get some kids that we can take to that next level. So we have a big class coming in this year. We have 9 guys. A lot of we have several local kids, and then some pretty good kids from. We have a few kids from Colorado, Alaska, Oregon. And so on the men's side, we have 9 men coming in, and we have 4 women this year coming in. And we return. We only lost a couple athletes last year, so we have a lot of returners that have stepped up and gotten better. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can do. I think this year we're going to be able to do some things that we haven't done in the past on the conference level, and as well as like regionally and nationally.
Sarah, when you're building a program, let's just go back on your journey that got you to GCU, and then how you did go about building the program. So, for the audience, your background and becoming the GCU cross country coach, what led you to GCU?
I grew up in Phoenix. I went to Mountain Point High School, and I was I grew up a swimmer and a runner. I ended up I was a 10-time state champion in track and cross country, and went to University of Colorado and lived there for 10 years. I was a 4-time national champion and at CU, and then ran professionally. And when my husband and I decided to start our family, we moved back to my husband's from New Jersey and I'm from Phoenix. So we moved back to Phoenix to raise our family. And I was lucky to my husband, or I was lucky with our head coach Tom Flood, mm-hmm. Came to me 3 years ago saying they lost their coach and they'd like to me to help build the distance program. And it's been a dream, like, to build a Division I program in my backyard and get to see it, like, build it to what we take it to a national level and see it through. It's been really fun, and I want to give them – I had a wonderful college experience, and I want to give them that same experience and help make GCU a well-known name on the – we've done really well on the track side, but also on the distance side.
Yeah, Tom's great. And, I think in your space, how many miles do you think you did on South Mountain through the years running for the Pride or in that area?
I still put in a lot of miles on the – I don't know. I probably thousands of miles. I love those trails. And so, I take our team over there as well.
That's cool. So you come to GCU. Tom says, hey, get over here. You come in and you decide to go which direction in going after recruits. Did you go inside of Arizona first and then outside across the United States and then worldwide, as a lot of coaches of GCU have done? Just give me your theory on – okay, I'm going to build this program, Brad. I have a clean slate in front of me.
You know, I actually started – my foundation is the kids in Arizona. That being said, I do have a lot of kids. We probably have about 60% of our team is from Arizona. Mm-hmm. But I tried – my recruiting strategy was to really work on the relationships with the kids in state and try to get the best kids that are in state to come to GCU. And outside of that, we've started to get, and especially the first 2 years when we couldn't go to the national championships, was trying to build those relationships here. And this year we have two of a couple of kids that are state champions for Arizona, and we're nationally ranked, that are coming to GCU this year, and we got a real good foundation of Arizona kids and have built some relationships with the good programs and coaches in Arizona. And so that's where we started, but we have some really good kids from out of state that are starting to want to come as well. So that's kind of our recruit. And also we also try to
look for kids from the Christian background and that go to some of the Christian schools as well, because I think that's a big, like, a foundation of our school is finding kids that are in those programs that would seek out a GCU as well.
When you're looking at recruiting, it's one thing in certain sports where, like in team sports where, and not to say that you're not a team sport in cross country, but it is measured by the minute, right? I mean, it comes down to where, what is your time? So I'm curious, there's not per se club for high school kids or junior high kids, right? Unless I'm missing something. So you really have to go off of their...
There is club track. So it is, track is different. Cross country and track are different because there isn't a club system like soccer or volleyball, per se, when you're looking at that. But at the same time, it can, like, there's, you can, one thing that's good with running is it's a time, you know, you can be like, well, you've hit this certain time, but there's other factors that go into it. How much training have they done? Have they been running 80 miles a week for the last 4 years, you know?
Is that what you look for? Is that a benchmark,
no,
Sarah?
So you, like, I think you try to look for a kid that maybe train, like, it depends, but is a little underdeveloped and has a more of a ceiling that can improve, under your coaching and in a team environment. What is, you know, have they played other sports? What is their, grades go into factor as well. So, and how they mesh with the team. Like, I think the team synergy for me is a big part of the picture. And are they going to be a part of that puzzle? Are they going to be willing to, you know, it can be really fun, but it's also tough because you're putting in a lot of miles. You have a lot of things to juggle and manage out. Just figuring out those personalities and how they fit.
Sure. What is the best part of your job?
The team, like being able to work with these athletes, get to know them, and figure out how I can make them better and fulfill the goals that they have and the goals that we've set. And that, seeing that through is the best part of my job by far.
What is the hardest part of your job?
I think sometimes it's fun too. The travel can be difficult. I have two young children, so that I try to make them a part of the team. They come to a lot of our meets and things, but we're on the road a lot. Like we're three sports. We have a season in the fall. We have a season indoors, and we have a season outdoors. So it's not only tough on, you know, like as a coach, but for the athletes, you're trying to, manage them so that they peak at the right times and can handle traveling to races with their academics and, not burning them out.
If you had one bit of advice to give to parents in the recruiting process in your sport, what advice would that be?
I think if you're interested in a program and you're looking for those things, reach out to the coaches, fill out the questionnaires, find out what they're looking for, and just be, I think the relationship is huge. So, like, finding out what, because each program's different, and for us, I think for every program, the big things are what you can do on the field, but also, are you well rounded? Are you getting it done in the classroom? Can you juggle it as a student athlete? And so, not being one-dimensional as an athlete is huge for me.
That's good stuff. It's good stuff. Hey, appreciate the visit. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and really appreciate the being able to talk about our program. Hopefully we'll have a championship for you guys to talk about this year.
That's good stuff. Appreciate it being on, and that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.